Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's time for a noon kick.
And as they say in Tinseltown, roll it.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
They had pride. They had talent. They had hats and T-shirts.
Dirt and Sprague on Football Friday.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app. Download the app, make the fan your favorite station, and enable push notifications for the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and your favorite shows.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on this Football Friday edition, a game day Duck edition as well.
We got a game day today. It's not just me and you. We got Buck in here. We got Lynch in here. We got like a whole circus doing the radio show today.
I've seen across the landscape of sports radio in the country from time to time. I like to see what shows are out there.
Sure, what everybody else is doing.
I've seen about four or five different four-man shows.
Okay.
And I've always thought in my head, I've done a three-man show, and it didn't work ultimately, and I'm not going to dive into why, but it didn't work. I can't imagine how to navigate a four-man show.
Less time for you and me. It's going to be an easy show today. Let's go. Let's toss to Buck. What do you think today, Buck?
Good.
I love this, man. We're doing traffic and weather every 10 minutes all day.
Do you think if we had a four-man show, do you really think there could be four different opinions on one topic?
No.
Coming up next, the Ducks loss, and we'll all four tell you four different reasons why.
No.
I think you would end up with being a lot of ganging up, you know, because it would be, you'd never want to be at 2-2 on an opinion because then you're just at the impasse. So it would end up being three people badgering somebody else about why they're wrong. The other thing I would have an issue with is what kind of law firm name do you give your show? How does that work? Or do you just call it something like the happy hour? You know, is it like, you know, you just you take everyone's name out of it.
The sports guys.
I mean, like, we have Primetime with Isaac and Suk, but it's like, you guys are Dirt and Sprague. We've got Dusty and Cam.
Yeah.
What would a four-man show be called?
It'd be the four sports pros.
The four sportsmen?
The four sportsmen.
There you go.
I like that.
And we've got a name.
We got a show name. Let's do this.
See, we're already off to a weird start because you're giving me this explanation. I'm thinking, and then Mike talks, and then Dirt talks, and I'm like, well, should I still talk or should I wait?
So many
voices.
Move over.
It's not your show anymore.
Yeah, shut up, Sprague.
The reason Buck is hanging out with us today is he is doing traffic and weather every single break.
Yeah, for all the Duck fans down there driving to Eugene. It sounds like we already have an accident on I-5, so you got to listen to Buck for his traffic updates.
Also, you should still make it down there in less than 2 hours.
Though. I'd hope so, yeah.
I want to point this out because I'm going to take a lot of pride in this. I did the Ducks postgame show last year. Of all the entities we do regarding Duck coverage, because we're amazing at it, the Ducks postgame was probably on the power ranking the very bottom of importance. I mean, every commercial break, it was like, our pregame show. Never a mention of the postgame. So I had many postgame shows where I'd have like two people text in.
Yeah, you were like the forgotten man on the game day crew last year.
Well, you're doing it this year.
I am. I'm Mr. Postgame this year.
And what I'm taking pleasure in is, as the guy who did it last year and felt like nobody was listening, somebody has tweeted you that's on our show timeline and said, how come Actor Johnson isn't doing Ducks game day coverage anymore? And I thought, he actually has been
year. I'm here, bro. I have I've actually done three pregames too. They've only, how many games have they played? Five so far?
They're 4-1, yeah.
4-1, so they played five games. I've actually done three of the pregames too. I did the pregame for the Auburn game, the opener. I went down there for the Nevada game because Dusty couldn't make it. And then we flip-flop for the Stanford game. So I've actually done three pregames too. So but the other game's on postgame, and then I'm also still doing the Monday night show.
So I think that listener just added themselves as somebody who hasn't listened to Ducks game day coverage yet.
Yeah, what the hell, bro? All right, here's what you need to do, okay? Tonight, when you're driving around or you're at home, turn on your radio because I will be back in this studio at like midnight to 1 a.m. doing a postgame show talking about Oregon and Colorado.
Yeah, you're probably going to be starting around 11:30 at night.
It's going to be a late one. I don't have the feel. Like, I felt good last week because you knew the Oregon-Cal game was going to be a quickie. Like, that was going to be run the football, ugly 1985. Bears defense. It's going to be a grinder, right? Wilcox versus Cristobal. That thing, it was like a pitcher's duel that was over in 2.5 hours. not getting the same sense about tonight's game.
No.
I got a feeling this
one. A lot of passing.
Could be extended just a tad, man.
Okay, so what's the number we can all agree on as we navigate this four-man show today? What's the number of people on one radio show where you think listeners don't even give it a chance? Like, it's a new show, and they come in and they go, we've got the sports guys.
The sports bros.
Airing every day from 10 to 1. Tune in. And then they go, okay, that kind of sounds interesting. I'll give it a chance. And they turn it on and they find out it's a blank person show. And they immediately don't even want to listen to it. They go, no, that's way too many people in the studio at one time. What's that number? Is it five?
The number's four.
You think four
the number's
is too
four.
Much?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say five because then people would have to tune out for us today. So it's five because we're going to make four work.
Very true. If you say four, that means nobody's going to listen today. Mike, what the hell is your problem, man?
Look at Mike's already checking out. He's like, you know, four is too much. I'm out. I don't want
to. He just wants to give us the three-man show we need.
All right.
I'm just being realistic. That's all.
You know what? This is the perfect setting for this. We got a great show.
Yes, we do.
It's a football Friday. Brian Howell covers the Colorado Buffaloes. He'll join us for the Daily Ticker at 12:30. We'll talk about the Oregon-Colorado game. I'm curious if Duck fan, is there a number in your mind offensively the Ducks need to score to where you walk out of that stadium tonight and you go, you know what, we're okay. Our offense is a little inconsistent, but overall, we're okay. What's that number they have to score on the Buffaloes? That point spread, by the way, has jumped all the way to 29 right now.
No, 22. You just have your 7-point teaser.
You're doing
in your
our
head.
Teaser math.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
We have a whole teaser thing we've set up for the weekend.
Our own weekend bet. Yeah.
No, that line is not at 29. It is actually up to 22.
But you can make it 29.
Yes.
Well, we have an 8-game, 7-point teaser. Mike, do you want in on this stupid bet that we're going to do? It's only $10.
No, I'm good. Thanks.
Okay. All right. I have a bookie now. Okay. So we'll get to that. We'll get to spray and line. We'll pack 12 picks against the spread. We're going to do all of it. I want to share a story that I teased the other day.
Yeah, you had a really gross story. You talked about this and we never got to it. I think it was on Wednesday.
I don't think this is going to be disgusting to anybody eating lunch right now. So just bear with me. I'm going to tell one. So last weekend I went for a relay race. The Hood to Coast has all these other sub relay races they do. And you only run two legs versus what you run in August, which is three. So we went to the Bend area. I have a dog and a cat. I text my little brother who lives right up the road from this station near downtown. I said, look, you're single. You have no responsibilities. Can you please help me out with my dog? He goes, sure. So he agrees to come over and walk my dog twice a day and feed my dog and my cat. This is the third or fourth time he's done this for me. I've gone on vacation. I've gone away. We don't want to bring the dog. He helps. So he does it. He texts me, hey, I'm all done. You know, she'll be ready to go when you guys get back. I said, thank you so much. That was awesome. We drive back in the morning. We get back. We're setting everything up. We're putting clothes away. We're exhausted. We're tired. I walk my dog. I take her on a walk. She's acting normal. Everything's going well. I get inside, and all of a sudden, this is like at 7 o'clock at night. We've been home for 5 hours. I started like smelling something weird. Well, I didn't figure it out until an hour later. I was throwing something away, and in my kitchen garbage, my little brother put all of the poop bags that he picked up in my kitchen garbage.
Oh, no.
Now, hold on. Here's the kicker. You could instantly go, well, what a funny prank. I texted him. I said, did you really put the dog poop bags in my kitchen? He goes, I didn't know where else to put them. I said, not in the kitchen would be a great start.
Who in their right mind thinks
that? Where would you put them in your house,
brother?
What
the hell?
Yeah, we got into a back and forth. Not like yelling at each other, but I was saying stuff. He would say something back. And I go, look, I'll take responsibility for not telling you where to put them, even though you've done this three or four times at my house. I would just put them under a bush outside.
Has he not put them in the kitchen garbage in the past?
Nope. He never has. He's done it 3 to 4 times. This was the first time he did that. And by the way, he didn't tie the bags up. So he would grab with the bag.
What the hell?
He'd turn the bag in and out and he would just drop a bag in my garbage.
Oh.
Hence the smell.
I then get you a glimpse into my childhood.
Did
here.
You ask him what he did with them the previous times?
Yeah, I said, you've always put them outside.
And you've never done this.
He goes, well, I forgot and you didn't tell me and I didn't know where another garbage was. So, and I said, but you put them in my kitchen.
Did you catch him in a lie? Maybe he didn't actually take your dog for the walk the last three times.
No, there was like 9 bags in there.
This is so wrong.
Okay, so
this is
making
so
of
wrong.
A dog walker over here. I then
call my mom on Monday, and she just moved, so I'm asking her how everything went. And I go, hey, get this. I tell my mom what happened, and you know what she does? She goes, you know what, Brandon? Give your little brother a break. He didn't know where to put him. I said, Mom.
Take it easy on him. Little brothers always get the benefit of the doubt.
He's 4 years younger than me, so he's 28. He's 28 years old.
It's the beauty of being a younger brother.
Take it easy on him.
By the way, we grew up with dogs, and not one time did we go, let's go clean up and then put it in the kitchen. My mom would have destroyed us. She would have murdered us and spanked us till we didn't have a butt anymore.
Yeah, we keep our garbage can in the garage, and I won't put the dog poop in the can in the garage. You leave it outside, and then when it's garbage day,
then you dump it in, and then you
dump the dog poop into the garbage can, and you roll it out to the curb.
Wow, what a smart person.
You don't want that smell anywhere near indoors. That is an outdoor smell. You get a little bucket, you throw them in there outside the garage, and you're good to go.
Yeah, it was always a bit of a, Brandon, don't do this. Little brother, it's okay, you can do this type setting growing up. I don't know what I'm more offended by, him doing that or my mom defending him.
See, the mom defending him, that's just a mom being a mom.
She wouldn't have defended me, I'll tell you that.
No, because he's the younger brother. Though,
there's probably instances where she's taken your side.
No.
Never?
Not once.
Younger brother thing, man.
I'm not kidding you when I say this. Not one time. Not a meal. Mm. Not an event. My little brother blew a manhole cover off and had to have the city come out to replace and fix the sewer system. He did that with a firecracker while skipping school. He didn't even get yelled at.
No punishment whatsoever.
I stole a Powerade one day my senior year
in
high school.
How dare you?
I got in-school suspension for one day.
You klepto.
And my mom just went at me. I couldn't have my car for a week.
Was this before or after the firecracker incident?
Oh, this was well after.
So did you point to the firecracker incident and be like,
yeah,
yo.
I did.
Unfair punishments here.
I did.
And then she goes, you know, right, Brandon, you're right. I punished you for that, for not watching your little brother better.
I mean, basically, that's what she would use against me. Because, Brandon, I expect this from Nick. I don't expect this from you.
Yeah. Parent saying, I expect more out of you is the absolute worst, because you could have a friend who acts like an idiot all the time and kind of gets away with murder because they act like an idiot all the time. But if you are mostly in line and then you step out, you're held to the standard you set for yourself.
It's ridiculous.
It's better off being a total slacker all the time.
This is way worse on your brother, man. This is way worse. How do you even come about that thought process of you're watching somebody's dog, you're picking up poop, you have to bring the poop then back inside because he's taking them for a walk. It's not like your dog's crapping all over the house and he's picking up living room turds or bathroom turds and then putting them in that garbage can. He's walking the dog outside, bringing the poop back inside the house.
Untied, by the way.
Untied poop back inside the house.
Just leave it on the porch.
I know. I would have been okay with that, too.
There's no reasoning for that whatsoever.
Yeah. I had to share that story, so sorry if you're eating lunch and that disturbed you out there, but I don't know what to say about people sometimes. It's just, it blows my mind how dumb we can be as human beings.
Especially immediate family.
I know.
Somebody said Dirt has a bucket for poop, but he's so lazy he doesn't put it in the bucket. This is true. I do. I have an outdoor bucket
for
poop.
And you just toss it wherever.
Sometimes when you get back from a walk, you just toss it alongside of the garage and you just grab it when you get back.
Yeah, because you'll grab it when it's garbage
day. I know where
it
is. It's on the outside of the house. It's not affecting anybody.
I largely do the same thing. All right, we got a good show today. We're going to start with some Pac-12 discussion. We'll run down the weekend in the Pac-12. What's the most interesting game outside of your favorite team? We'll talk about the Pac-12 weekend that will be. We'll do that next. Happy Football Friday, but first, Buck with weather and traffic.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
I hate to admit this because you get some people who are super against sports betting. But I just told Buck and Dirt, I was saying that sports gambling's made me a smarter sports person. Because you can just randomly talk about a game and a matchup and somebody go, how have they been lately? Like, we brought up Notre Dame USC because we're talking about Pac-12 football here. And I said, a couple weeks ago, they barely covered against Virginia. That was a back and forth slugfest. And then Dirk goes, who'd they play last week? And Buck and I both were like, Bowling Green.
52-0 or 55-0. They covered the huge spread in that game.
I think they were like 35-point favorites or whatever that was. But
46. I think it was
46.
Yeah, it was 45 or 46 points, and they covered it.
But USC is taking on Notre Dame. Normally, this game is pretty exciting, but I don't know how exciting it's going to be for people because it's in South Bend. Notre Dame seems to be the real deal, and USC has their struggles. So let's just start with that game. Dirt, what are we expecting from USC? They're such a week-to-week team that if you told me they come within a field goal of losing or beating Notre Dame, I wouldn't be stunned. And if they get blown out by the Irish, I wouldn't be shocked. I think that's what comes in large part to having such an inconsistent coach like Clay Helton.
Yeah, well, an inconsistent coach and an inconsistent quarterback to go with it. And I'm not putting much stock in their chances this week. I think Notre Dame is a team that's on a mission. They realized that they lost the game to Georgia, and they went toe-to-toe with them, and they weren't eliminated because of it. Sometimes you lose a big-time game early in the season, and the way you play, immediately you're thrown out of the conversation. But when Notre Dame went down to Georgia and only lost 23-17, and they had a chance at the end to win it, I think that earned a lot of respect for people, considering the way that they got blown out by Clemson last year in the college football playoff. But the difficult part of losing that game is now Notre Dame understands they have to be perfect. So I don't think there's going to be a team on their schedule this year that they overlook, knowing that. And especially when a program like USC comes to town, you're not sleepwalking through that game. I think you're going to get Notre Dame's best effort. And can you trust a backup quarterback for USC to go in there and win? I still have visions of USC Washington in my mind from a couple of weeks ago. And I think Notre Dame's a better football team than Washington. And USC just continuously shot themselves in the foot in that game. They had a chance, but if you can't do it in Seattle, I'm not going to give you much of a chance to do it at Notre Dame. And I'm thinking about throwing that in my Sprague in the Line picks today. I do think Notre Dame's a really good football team. I think USC can struggle on the back end defensively a little bit. And Ian Book's a good quarterback. So that's a tough test for USC. I'm not giving them much of a chance.
It's not often that you would get USC Notre Dame, and it's probably my third or fourth most important game of the Pac-12 weekend.
It really is. Well, because it's not a conference game.
Like, I know, but it's still a draw of those two traditional powerhouse names and the helmets and the color schemes going against each other. I'm far more interested in Washington State, Arizona State, because Arizona State could actually prove a lot if they get this win. Washington State is kind of feels like on the ropes a little bit, like they have to get this win unless they or otherwise they'll maybe teeter the other way.
Yeah.
And then here's my most interesting game. It's Washington at Arizona.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
You get Oregon next week and traveling up to Seattle. You're going on the road to the desert where you have struggled. And Arizona, I don't think they're a pushover. Khalil Tate, he threw for 400 yards last weekend against Colorado, which is why probably many people think Oregon's going to light up the Buffs. But Washington's reeling, man. To have that loss last weekend against a not-so-good Stanford team, I don't know what to make of it. It's going to be a real gut check, I think, for the Huskies to go down there. They're playing the very late game, the 8 o'clock kick, and Arizona's feeling good. They've won four games in a row, and as I mentioned, Khalil Tate, I think he's got that confidence going.
Yeah, I look at those games, too. I think the pressure is amplified depending on what happens tonight in Eugene. Like, if Oregon's able to beat Colorado, they're a big favorite, and we'll see if they can cover that. They got to win the game first, and if they do, I think it just adds the pressure on Washington State, because Mario Cristobal says this all the time, and he said it on our show on Tuesday when we talked to him, and I tend to agree with him that it's almost like a tournament every single week in the conference, that it's survive and advance. And if you're Washington and Washington State, you're not technically eliminated from the race yet. You still play each other. Washington State still has chances against Stanford and Cal down the road. They still got Oregon coming up on the schedule. Like, you're not technically eliminated yet. But if Oregon is to win tonight in Washington and or Washington State is to lose this weekend down on the desert, which wouldn't shock me based on the way they played the last couple of weeks, you're staring up at a three-game deficit in the Pac-12 North standings. And that's just really tough to overcome.
You're not overcoming
right?
that.
You play the math. Even if you beat Oregon head-to-head, which both Washington and Washington State have the ability to do so, you would then need Oregon to lose two more games down the stretch, and you would have to play perfect the rest of the way yourself. So those are huge, huge games for the Pac-12 North standings, because if you're Oregon right now, and I talked about this on Monday, like, you don't have an opportunity. It's not like there's a crack in the window. The door has been swung wide open for you with the chance to win the North. You just can't dribble it off your foot. You have to capitalize because you already have a head-to-head win over Stanford. You already have a head-to-head win over Cal and already two conference losses for Washington and Washington State. It's a huge opportunity. But if Washington and Washington State want to stay in the race and have a chance, not only do they have to beat Oregon head-to-head, they got to get wins this weekend. And they're both really tough matchups because Arizona's playing good football. Washington's been a little sluggish on the offensive side. And I think we're sleeping on ASU a little bit. I really do.
Well, I think they can prove that. That was going to be where I was going to go next, was the Cougars going down to the desert as well. And that's a 12:30 kick in Tempe. ASU 4-1 as well. They're not really talked about in the Pac-12. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about Oregon, we talk about Washington, and we talk about Utah, USC. Of teams that are good, Arizona and Arizona State, both 4-1. Arizona State ranked in the top 25 right now. and they just beat Cal last weekend.
Yeah.
This is, or 2 weeks ago. This is a real opportunity for them. Getting Washington State coming in, defensive coordinator quits last Friday. A lot of confusion going on, I think, within the coaching staff. Mike Leach calling out his team. They didn't show up to Utah. They're still good, but are they good enough to go beat Arizona State, who I know I'm responsible for this. I feel like I underrate the Sun Devils every single week they play.
Jaden Daniels is a good quarterback. I think he's improved week after week. And I don't know if there's a team in the conference right now that I'm more just questioning who are they than Washington State. I mean, the way they started the season and it looked good and Gordon throws the 9 touchdowns, he got a 30-point lead against UCLA, and ever since then it's kind of evaporated from them. And then to lay the egg that they did on the road against Utah and then have that followed up with your defensive coordinator quitting halfway through the season, it's just a weird, weird look for them. And you know who they are offensively. I'm not going to buy too much into the one game against Utah in which they struggled. Utah's got a good defense, and then it was on the road, bad weather conditions. That doesn't shock me. So they should get back on track on that side of the ball. I think the big question coming into the year was how good could they be defensively? And I know they turned the ball over 6 times and they didn't help themselves out, but defensively they collapsed in the second half against UCLA, and they made Tyler Huntley and Utah's offense look like a juggernaut the very next week, and that's not easy to do because we all know Utah has their issues on the offensive end. So that to me is where it starts with Washington State. I trust their offense, and they're going to get back on track eventually. But if you can't stop people, and Jaden Daniels, the way he's playing right now, he was successful against Cal. Cal's got a good defense, and they went on the road, and they moved the ball a little bit. So it starts on that side, and I don't know what to expect with them having a new defensive coordinator this week.
And that's basically a pick 'em, by the way, State, Arizona State. So Vegas thinks the Cougars can respond and go in there and potentially get a win. We'll see. USC at Notre Dame, Washington State at Arizona State, and then the Huskies against Arizona are your matchups. We'll get to the Utah Beav game coming up. But up next is the Daily Ticker, and we've got Brian Howell, who writes for the Boulder Daily. He covers the Colorado Buffaloes. They're in Eugene tonight, and we'll talk to him next on the Daily Ticker. Dirt and Sprague back with more on The Fan.
Adam, that's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, ticker time here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. The Buffaloes visiting Autzen Stadium tonight. We'll have the pregame coverage starting right at 3 when we sign off as Oregon hosting Colorado. Right now that spread is 21.5, depending on what book you're looking at. So we're going to talk with Brian Howell, who covers the Colorado Buffaloes for the Boulder Daily Camera. He's on Twitter at BrianHowell33. And he joins us now. Brian, thanks so much for hopping on with us here in Portland, man. I appreciate it. I'll start with the big question I think Duck fan has. Is Laviska Shenault going to play tonight?
That's the biggest question that Buff fans have as well. I don't know the answer to that. I know he did make the trip, so that's a good sign. You know, obviously, they limit that roster, how many people they can bring on the trip. So I think it's a good sign that they brought him on the trip. That means they think he could play. So. He went through warm-ups last week and then did not play. So, honestly, I think we got to wait till that first offensive play to see if Lavisca's going to play or not.
Yeah, see if he steps out on the field. You know, watching Colorado this year from afar and seeing chunks of their games here and there, I feel like you can identify a football team that's pretty solid on the offensive side, even with the Shenault injury, but struggles a little bit defensively. Is that a fair assessment, and how you feel about Colorado this far into the season?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, offensively, I mean, Lavisca's really not had a great season. It's not all his fault. I mean, he was double covered so much early on that his numbers just aren't there right now. So other guys have stepped up. They played really well offensively, and Steven Montez has been really good this year. And then defensively, until last week against Arizona, they had been much better in the second half of every single game. Had given up a lot of points and yards first half, made great adjustments, played really well second half. Last week, not so much. It was, Arizona had a pretty good second half against them, but that defense is struggling. They've got a lot of injuries on that side of the ball. There's a lot of true freshmen that are getting on the field at this point in the year. But I mean, this is a program that's obviously still building and had a lot of holes to fill on the defensive side that Mel Tucker will hopefully fill over the next couple of years. But right now, I think that's a group that's going to probably struggle throughout the year.
Yeah. Brian Howell is our guest. He covers the Colorado Buffaloes. They get ready to take on Oregon tonight, 7 o'clock FS1. He's on Twitter at BrianHowell33. And obviously you catch the game here on Portland Sports Leader 1080, The Fan. Look, that spread's 21.5, Brian. If you had to lay a bet on which direction would you go? Would you go Colorado with all those points, or do you think Oregon is going to comfortably cover it given what you just said about the defense?
Well, see, I like to be a little more optimistic, so I would take Colorado on the points. But the matchup on paper does not look good at all. I mean, you look at the injuries that CU's got on the defensive side, and their number two cornerback right now is a true freshman that before last Saturday had two career snaps. Their number three corner is a true freshman that was a receiver until the weekend of fall camp, and he has not played a snap of college football yet. So that's what they've got trying to cover receivers tonight.
Yeah,
when you look at that and you look at the fact that, you know, they've got some injuries on the defensive line and leaning on true freshman there, on paper it just looks like a really bad matchup for Colorado. So I think it's a tough bet because of all those things.
Yeah, Brian, I love that answer, but you're really making me think Oregon's going to just destroy him tonight. Right now,
yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. It sounds on paper like, geez, if Justin Herbert doesn't throw for 800 yards and 12 touchdowns, it's a bad game for him. But it just looks like a bad matchup.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw Khalil Tate go off on that defense last week too. I think he had 400 plus yards. But Colorado can sling it, and they can move the football on their own right. You mentioned the numbers not there for Shenault and double coverage and injuries having something to do with it. But how has the offense played this year up to expectations and look week in and week out?
I think pretty well. I think other than the fact that we all thought LaVisca was going to be the star, and it's been Tony Brown instead. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you take the names away from it, I mean, you've got a star receiver, and that's what we expected this year. It just happened to be Tony Brown and not LaVisca. So I think offensively, I mean, they're scoring a lot of points, and I mean, they're a little inconsistent, but I mean, you end up putting up over 30 points a game almost every week. So you'll take that most weeks. So, you know, I think offensively they're pretty solid. You know, they've had one game against Air Force where they didn't really play that well offensively, but other than that, they've been pretty solid. So I don't think you can complain too much about that offense.
Yeah. Brian Howe is our guest. He covers the Colorado Buffaloes. He's on Twitter at BrianHowe33 as the Buffs are in Eugene to take on the Ducks tonight, 7 o'clock. Pregame coverage here on The Fan starts at 3. How would you classify, you mentioned all these injuries, it's always tough, but how would you classify Mel Tucker's first year with Colorado, and how does the fan base feel about him as the head coach thus far, even though we're only a few games in?
I think the fans love him. I think the players love him. I mean, he's a guy that's come in and really kind of changed the mindset of the program within, and the players really like him. I mean, he's a tough-nosed coach, but you know, he's a player's coach, and that doesn't mean that he's easy on him, but they really like his approach, and the fans have really taken to him. Got a great personality, and so I would say, even though, you know, there's a couple games right now that you would say they probably should have or could have won, and that they didn't, I think you'd have to look at it and say it's been a success right now.
Yeah, it's a slow progress, no doubt, whenever you're trying to get a program to where you want it to go. You mentioned, you know, not having a lot of depth and a lot of young guys having to play, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I don't know how closely you follow recruiting, but I'm just curious if they've seen a major uptick getting a guy from SEC country, a well-known dude, you know, out of Georgia and Alabama. Have they seen an uptick in the recruiting path?
I haven't seen a major one. I think that even Mel, when I talked to him over the summer, said, I mean, they've got their ways they want to recruit, but he said, hey, I know that winning football games is what's going to get guys here, and they've got to have a good season. I think getting to a bowl game, we'll see a lot of uptick there. I mean, they just had a guy decommit the other day, but they also had two commits earlier this week. So I don't think it's been like they're not raking in four stars or anything like that, but one thing we have seen is that their recruiting footprint has really expanded. I mean, under Mike McIntyre, it was pretty much Colorado, California, Texas, and then maybe a couple guys here and there. Well, Mel Tucker is sticking with those three states, but he's going all over the place and using his roots and his staff's roots in Louisiana and Georgia and Florida and places like that. So I think we're seeing players that are coming from a wider footprint.
Yeah, I saw the attendance at that Colorado-Nebraska game because that was a big one. And I grew up watching that rivalry, and I liked watching those two teams go against each other. And there was so much red in those stands. I know there's a lot of strong, diehard Buff fans out there. Do you feel like they haven't enjoyed going to the Pac-12, that they still largely identify more with the Big 12 as a fan base?
No, I think they love the Pac-12, but I think they really miss that Nebraska game. I mean, I don't think there's really a whole lot of other games in the Big 12 they miss, but that one was one that, especially the last, 10, 15 years of that rivalry, was just so much fun. And I think they miss Nebraska, but fans like going to Eugene and Seattle and, L.A. instead of Ames, Iowa and Lawrence, Kansas, and places like that. So, yeah, I think all in all, fans love the Pac-12. It's just that one game that, boy, they miss it. Because the thing that Colorado is missing right now is a rival. And they, right. I mean, the Pac-12 tries to manufacture that. And obviously, Oregon has Oregon State. When Colorado and Utah joined the Pac-12, they said, look, you guys are rivals. And they just, you know, they don't hate each other. And there's right. nothing really there as a rivalry goes other than they're paired up on basketball weekends and things like that. So it's just not there. So they missed Nebraska.
Yeah, no doubt. Everybody misses watching that game. Day after Thanksgiving, it was fun to see it the last couple of years. And both of them were really good games as well. That was a crazy comeback this year. You mentioned some of the trips around the city and just the conference being a fun one. What has surprised you the most, I guess? I mean, Pac-12 play, Colorado's a couple of plays away from being 5-0, which is wild to think about. Maybe they're a couple of plays away from being, you know, 2-3 and losing that Nebraska game or losing the ASU game. What surprised you the most this year in the conference?
Everything. I mean, it's a wild conference. And, I mean, week in and week out, I think there's a game almost every single weekend. And you're like, wow, I never saw that coming. And, I mean, the biggest surprise, obviously, was that UCLA-Washington State game, which – really came out of nowhere. And you look at UCLA every other week and they've been dreadful. I don't know how for 19 minutes they were unbelievable, but that was probably the biggest thing. But it's just still been, it's been so unpredictable. And, I think that, Oregon, I expected to be on top. You know, Utah has been pretty good. Arizona's maybe been a little bit of a surprise with the way they've played so far. And I didn't think they would win in Boulder last week, but they played well. So, Washington being down is a little bit of a surprise.
Absolutely. Brian Howe covers the Colorado Buffaloes. He's on Twitter at BrianHowe33. Give him a follow for all things Buffs as they get ready to take on the Oregon Ducks tonight in Eugene. Brian, thank you so much for the time, man. Great insight. And we'll catch up with you down the road.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. There we go. Great stuff from Brian Howe, who writes for the Daily Boulder Camera. And he's on Twitter at BrianHowe33.
Yeah, I think it's an exciting direction getting Mel Tucker, and you can see it start to take shape. And we talk a lot about that with Oregon State. They're a couple of plays away, or what is it, 6 points away from being 4-1 at this point in the season. You play the what-if game for Colorado. They lost a close one, I think, in overtime to Air Force at home, coming off their win over Nebraska. And then last week, it was 35-30, and they were driving in the final couple minutes of that game to take a lead and potentially go on to win that one. So they're a few plays away here or there. So they've hung with programs. I think the weird part about tonight, I know a lot of folks have looked at that line and wondered, how is this game 21? How is it 22? And I've said this all week, Colorado's not good defensively. So something's got to give tonight. Oregon's offense has to figure it out, or maybe this is the weekend we all hit full panic mode because they can't score. Colorado's having a really tough time stopping their opponents, and if there's ever a get-right game for an offense, it's them coming to town for Oregon.
Well, and that's what I want to know from Duck fan is, for all the complaining about the offense, despite them being 4-1, we've had a lot of people that have voiced the opinion and concern about the Ducks' offense. Do you think Oregon needs to score a certain number where fans kind of give it a rest for a while until it bothers them in whatever the next game is for them offensively? And if so, what is the number you need to see Oregon score on that Colorado defense? We'll talk about that one next on The Fan.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, we'll get to the Beavers-Utah game coming up at 1 o'clock. But let's talk a little bit about Colorado coming to town. We mentioned the spread. The spread right now is at 22. The Ducks are heavy favorites. And that number has gone up a few points since Wednesday. What is the number in your mind, Andy Dirt Johnson? Ducks have to score blank. That where you think come Monday, we're not having to go, coming up next, the Ducks win, but they still suck.
What's the problem with the offense?
What is that number for you with a depleted, bad Colorado defensive group?
It has to be 30 to 35. You look at what Colorado has done this year. They're the 10th ranked defense in the conference. The only ones that are worse than them through essentially the halfway point of the season are Arizona and UCLA. They're giving up 470 yards per game. Just to compare that to what Oregon's doing, Oregon's giving up 261. There's a difference in over 200 yards in total of what the defenses are allowing this year. We just heard about how banged up they are on that side of the ball. Colorado has not held an opponent below 30 points this year. I just let that sink in for a second. They have not held a team below 30. They gave up 31 to Colorado State, 31 to Nebraska, 30 to Air Force, 31 to Arizona State, and then 35 last week in a loss to Arizona. So this is a defense that has struggled stopping people from start to finish. And I said it earlier in the week, and I still believe it. I think this is the reverse challenge of Cal. Colorado's got a decent offense. They got some skilled players that can make plays, and maybe Chenault ends up playing tonight, and the task becomes a lot tougher. They can move in on people, and they've scored a lot of points this year. Defensively, they are atrocious. Outside of Arizona and UCLA, it's really hard to find a worse defense in the conference. And Oregon, as long as they play clean football and don't have the dumb penalties and the bad turnovers at really awful times that kill drives, should easily be able to score 30 to 35 points tonight in this game.
What if it's like a 30 to 20? Yeah, are we then going to bitch and moan about the defense?
Probably.
Are we going to come in and be like, why did we only put up 30 and they scored 20? You know what I mean? Like, I'm almost at a point, Dirt, and I said this on Monday. You know, I understand the offense clearly, it doesn't look right. It has its problems. It's not a perfect system. You could make a strong argument. I wouldn't even go back on you that if you want to say personnel versus what you run is maybe not stacking up perfectly. But I just wonder at what point will the minority of Duck fans that want to vocally complain versus Duck fan like this one just says, I don't care how many points Oregon scores as long as it's one more than Colorado. You know what I mean? The 4-8 season, I think, humbled a lot of Duck fans, and you have a big portion that's just like, just win the games. I just want you to win.
Just win, baby.
But you still have those other segment of fans that are like, hey, it's not good enough. This isn't good enough. This isn't good enough. And I'm really going to be curious to see how Oregon comes out tonight, what they're able to do on that defense, and then what is the final, and is that going to make every Duck fan universally happy?
No, the answer to that is no. People will always find something to complain and be concerned about.
Because, and I know it's not apples to apples here, but like, just to take an example, the Beavs won at UCLA last weekend.
Sure.
There was nothing to complain about.
Yeah.
Nothing.
I mean, they hadn't had a conference win in a while, so I think you were just excited about having one of those. I mean, they won one last year, I know that, but a clean start to finish win in Pac-12 play, you were just thrilled about that. Look, people are always going to find something to complain about. I think it's just a matter of how do they look. Like, is it an offense, whether it's 28 points, whether it's 56 points, are you coming away from that game saying, man, you know what, they look good. They look clean. They ran the ball effectively. They didn't shoot themselves in the foot in the red zone. Herbert didn't miss wide open wide receivers running all over the field. Like, they made plays. Like, the final score and the total points doesn't always necessarily tell the entire story of the football game. But I think you just want to see them clean things up, not turn the ball over, not have bad penalties. And if you can't score and move the ball successfully against Colorado, I think the concern just it begs the question of who can you? Like, you got Washington next week. I know Washington's got their issues, but they're much better defensively than Colorado is. Cal's a good defense. Like, if you can't do it against Colorado, it leaves you concerned going forward. But with the Pac-12 the way it is this year, I understand the mindset, man. Just get wins, pile them up, and try and build a lead in the Pac-12 North.
I think people's expectations and what they set as their expectations for themselves at the start of the season and whether they adjust those expectations or not is what dictates your reaction from tonight's game. I think that if you thought that they were going to come out and be a 40-point-a-game offense every game and you're still expecting that week to week, you're still going to be disappointed.
Seems a bit ridiculous to be in that camp.
But if you're going based off what you'd seen so far, I think you just want to see it improve. You just want to see there be more elements to it. You want to see him maybe hit a deep threat. Dirt, I think you hit the nail on the head with the magic number. I think it's got to be that 30 threshold because of what Colorado has given up to all of their opponents this year and what we haven't seen Oregon do.
Right.
I think if they score 28 points, people are going to be uneasy on Monday. That's what I think the answer
is. How many points a game did the Ducks average under Mike Bilotti?
Oh, God, I don't know. Probably high 20s, right. Low 30s.
Okay,
I don't know.
Buck's answer is dead on. No idea. Nobody listening has any idea. A five-year window has now changed entirely how a segment of a fan base views the program's success.
Sure, I would also argue that college football was drastically different with Mike in that era of college football.
And Oregon fans
specifically
who set the bar at Chip Kelly's scorched earth offense. You know, not a realistic standard.
I don't think that's real for anybody.
No, it isn't, but I think there are still Ducks fans that remember that brand of Oregon football. Right. Like, why aren't we more like that?
There's like four teams in the entire country that are capable of doing that. Oregon ain't one of them.
And they're not
close. If you thought they were going to be, you don't watch football.
If you haven't adjusted those expectations yet, it's time to.
But it's going to look different. I hate to do the whole cliche multiple people talking in one segment thing, but Dirt is right. It has to be, hell, if you even want to set 35, I'm cool with that because Arizona just did that. And I think you have.
At Colorado.
Yeah, at Colorado. So I think you're at home. It's a short week, obviously, for everybody, but it's a short week, and Colorado has to travel. They're banged up. We just talked to Brian Howe. They're banged up. Laviska Shenault might not play. So there's one big weapon that's out of the Colorado offense potentially, and even if he does play, you think Andy Avalos probably has a plan in place to get ready for him. This is your moment. Like, you might not have another one of these until maybe the Civil War, where you look at the game and you go, Oregon should comfortably win. This is your very comfortable win this weekend, given where the spread is, given what Cristobal has been hearing about for a week, and given that they haven't really broken through yet. You know, say what you want about the offense, the philosophy, whatnot. They're going to have a game where they punch through and they do drop a ton of points. You would have to lean more tonight than any other just because of what Colorado's currently dealing with.
Yeah, I go into every game a little scared just based on the way the conference is broken down this year. Like, just nothing feels like a guarantee anymore, even though it's a 22-point spread. And I'm with you. Like, this is a game that you circle and say Oregon should win. But, I mean, we did that with Washington State and UCLA, and they were up by 32 points, and they found a way to blow it. So you never want to take a team for granted. But I do think this is the night that Oregon puts it all together. You look at the way they've gone the last 2 weeks. They couldn't run the football against Stanford, and I think a big part of that was not having Jake Hansen. And you look at the way Stanford was able to dominate the line of scrimmage against Washington, it changes the perception of that game a little bit for me. Oregon focused a lot on the bye week on getting the running game going, and we can all sit here and bitch and moan about the play calls and not being more aggressive. They ran the ball as a football team for almost 200 total yards. I mean, every single one of their backs averaged over 4 yards a carry. One of their backs averaged over 5 yards a carry. They ran the ball effectively, and they got back to having the identity they want. They just shot themselves in the foot. They missed open guys in the passing game. They turned the ball over in the red zone. They had dumb penalties that piled up. And those, at least up until this point in the season, had been uncharacteristic for Oregon. They weren't a team that turned the ball over, and they weren't a team that had penalty issues. So I view that game kind of as the outlier. So I had that on top of Oregon going against a bad defense and having their receivers with another full week of practice under their belt. I think Juwan Johnson, Micah Pittman, and Brendan Schooler all seeing the field and kind of shaking that rust off a little bit. I do think this is the game that their offense puts it all together and drops a hammer on a bad defense.
I also think it's a good test for the defense. You haven't faced a ton of great offenses, and Colorado, say what you want, they've at least shown that they can put points on the board. So if you can shut them down, even without Laviska Shenault, I think it's just something to build on momentum-wise because you get Washington next week.
Yeah.
All right, we got a loaded second hour. There's a lot to get to, but we're going to start it with Oregon State and Utah. Can the Beavers hang with the Utes, or is this going to be fat, happy, celebrating a win, and then getting blown out in Reser? You can share your thoughts with the Better You Today text line 55305. We'll kick off hour number two with that next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.